Welcome everyone to this month's National Grassroots Conference call. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Naveed Chowdhury, Head of Campaigns at Results UK. And a big welcome to any of you who are new who are joining us tonight. So welcome. I want to start by talking about the kind of massive change in British politics that we've been seeing in the last few weeks. And of course that does have a big impact on the work we do to help the poorest people on this planet get access to their rights to health, education and economic opportunities. As you can imagine, carrying on with our advocacy activities at a time of significant change in government has been very challenging for everyone here in the office over the last couple of weeks. The new government was put in place much faster than we might have predicted, and while this is good in some ways, for example, limiting the period of uncertainty when we don't know who is making decisions, it did mean that we had to replan some of our immediate activities, particularly moments on the Global Fund replenishment and the Rio Nutrition event, which is in just 2 days' time now. What we had thought would be legacy issues for David Cameron, Justine Greening and George Osborne are now on the agenda of very different players, who we now have to get to know and learn how to influence, and building relationships, in some cases, from scratch. But let's face it, that's the nature of politics, and at Results, we have a job to do, and we will be working how to do this in the positive, constructive way that we hope we always do. I'd like to thank you all for being very patient with us as we've changed our requests of you at very short notice, particularly on the Global Fund last month. Theresa May became Prime Minister just days after we sent out the original request to meet your MP, whereas we had expected to have until the 9th of September, the date the Tory leadership election results were originally to have been announced. And we had that time to influence the outgoing administration. Theresa May was very quick to appoint her cabinet, including the new Secretary of State for International Development, Priti Patel, a known aid sceptic. So we definitely needed to acknowledge the change of the Secretary of State, and in the time frame with this last action, it seemed best to turn what had been a request to visit your MP into a request to write to the new Secretary of State. Now, I know that most of you will have been confident to make your own decisions about how to deal with that change of direction. I hope we explained the change adequately, but it has, of course, meant that once again this month, we've been sending you quite a lot of emails. So apologies for that, and do get in touch if you feel you need any advice. For example, if your MP has agreed to meet with you, or if they've got a new role. Things are moving very rapidly, but we're still expecting a UK pledge at the Global Fund Replenishment Conference in Montreal in Canada on the 16th of September. What we don't know is when the UK government will be making a final decision about the size of the UK pledge, and it's very possible that we simply won't find that out. So there's everything to pray for, and a strong plea for the Global Fund from engaged citizens is as vital now as it was last month. If you haven't yet taken that action, please do so if you can, and we'll be returning to the Global Fund again next month. I was struck by something that David Lammy MP wrote in his letter back to London Group member Chelsea Beeney. Now, she isn't in the room here, but I would thank her if she was. For sharing that letter. David Lammy said, "The information you have included in your letter is outstanding, and I would like to thank you again for sharing this with me. I am proud that my constituents like yourself have actively supported this cause." So I think there we've got some direct evidence that you're having some impact at this really important time on the Global Fund. The very extensive change of personnel in government has, of course, resulted in a new leadership, and it would appear that this leadership is not as favourable to international development as the last administration. Time will tell what this means for the particular policy areas that we work on. But for example, Theresa May has a very good track record on violence against women, but she's been accused of downgrading climate change in the scrapping of DEC, the former Department for Energy and Climate Change. We're told that she's not so influenced by the media. I don't know if that's true or not. And she hasn't, in fact, got a strong record of speaking out on international issues. Now, if you add to that the as-yet unclear remit of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, the new Department for International Trade, a new Secretary of State for International Development who's in favour, of seeing international development as being in the national interest, all of these things are things that we're going to have to discover in coming months, what the implications are for us. Despite the inevitable concerns, we're pleased to have heard that in her first conversation with UN Secretary General, Theresa May expressed that she was, quote, proud of the UK's leading role on international development and reaffirmed the UK's commitment to spending 0.7% of our national income on aid. That quote appears on the government website. So that's a really good sign. Both Theresa May and the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson have stated that they want to see Britain being more internationalist in its outlook, not less, as a result of Brexit. Also, we have a new Minister of State for International Development, Rory Stewart. That's one of Priti Patel's deputy ministers, who is very positive on international development, a supporter of the 0.7% spending target for international aid. So we need to maintain our positive approach and certainly not fear the worst, as some in our sector might be tempted to do. If you're interested in knowing a little bit more about the new ministerial team, Ella Hopkins, our new Parliamentary Advocacy Coordinator here in the office, who's on the call tonight, has written a blog post on the subject. You can find that on www.results.org.uk/blog. And her post is the third item in the list, I think, at the moment. So we've obviously had plenty of discussions about all of this in the office, and I'm sure you have too. Thanks to those of you who've been sharing intelligence information on the Facebook group. If you aren't a member, do join. There are quite a few people starting to post on this now. So I'm sure we all have our opinions about the new lineup of the government, but I wondered if we could just make a space at the moment if anyone on this call would like to share any observations or thoughts.
Mark here from Norwich.
Hi Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, we had a chat about after the restructure of the new PM, and we just wondered whether that was an idea. I think I sent an email out to group leaders about this, about maybe writing a letter to actually Theresa May, and just thinking about how many sort of groups out there would actually be thinking about sending letters in from grassroots into Theresa May, and I just wondered what impression that would be, having sort of 24 letters from around the country showing their support for international development to her, on the back of her comment that she made at the UN, you know. And obviously there was this, was it yesterday she talked about setting up regarding child slavery or something like that. So I just wonder whether that was what people thought about that as an idea.
Mark, I followed that up. I got onto a format that you had to send a message of 1,000 characters. I managed to do that, but and then looking for a send button. I didn't see it, but I only hope that when I logged out, so to speak, the message went through to Theresa May. I had spent a little time previously because trying to find her email address, and the first one that cropped up was later found to be unknown, and the second time on the .gov a method, as I say, I don't know whether the message finally went through. It didn't appear in my send list, but I hope that she did receive it. Can anybody tell me whether my hopes are right, or have I to try again?
I hope so. Thank you so much for doing that. It kind of depends exactly what you did. Was that an email? Was that William there?
Yes.
Was that an email?
Yes, so as, if you wish to communicate with Theresa May, fill in this form. So I gave my name, address and email, and then there was a space a little lower down for this 1,000 character.
Oh, I see. I've got it. We might just check that out ourselves. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, tell I'm from Birmingham here. I sent one of those to David Cameron to get him to go to the Malta conference 3 or 4 months ago when he, and it was a quick, you asked us to do a quick communique to David Cameron, and I did that, and it goes into a, it goes into a big, massive general box, email box he has.
But Caroline, did you press a sort of send button, or did it just by sort of moving back to...
I can't remember actually, William, but it got there because it didn't accept, it didn't say I hadn't got there, but it definitely it went somewhere anyway. Whether it's an effective way of sending a message to Theresa May or in fact David Cameron at the time, I'm not 100% sure, but it's up there. It'll be the same. It'll be just the same as David Cameron had before for Theresa May.
Thanks for those of you who are doing those kinds of things. I think it's about being creative. As I said a minute ago, you know, we're trying to work out the best ways of influencing the new lineup. I don't think anyone knows the right answer. Mark, I think your idea is a really great one, and I hope, you know, people feel comfortable to do that. We have, as a result, from the office, we've sent a letter to both Theresa May and to Priti Patel. I'm sure you'll be aware that a lot of organisations are kind of doing that to sort of set out their stalls. We're not very clear how soon they will actually get to see some of those, but it's definitely worth doing. So, I think it's a matter of the more the merrier, really. I think Neil, here in London, obviously just wanted to make a comment.
So, yeah, it's a general comment. So, on back to what we're saying about the kind of direction of travel for aid, we've kind of moved towards aid in the national strategy and in the national interest, in the strategy. It sounds like, well, it's definitely the case that the aid is moving outside of Dickley and moving into places like the SEO and also into the Ministry of Defence. So, we might want to consider engaging with people like Boris Johnson.
Yes. I think that's absolutely right, and we're going to need to work out how the best ways are to do that going into the future. I'm sure we'll all learn more as the months go by. So I'd like, if I can, just to move us on. We may have time to come back to this, but we have a speaker hopefully waiting to join us shortly. Before we dial her in, I was wondering if I could ask Amira just quickly to do a very quick roundup of grassroots activities in the last month.
Hi everyone. So as many of you know, we've had a couple of advocacy opportunities last month, which were particularly linked to TB and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB and Malaria. So it was a great opportunity for some of the members of the network to connect with prominent organisations and individuals working with the fund. So for those of you who haven't kind of heard some feedback about the event, on the 12th of July, some of our grassroots members attended a parliamentary reception hosted by the APPGs on HIV and AIDS, global tuberculosis and malaria and neglected tropical diseases, which was on the Global Fund. Jeff Potter and Sue Dart, who are most recently participants in the Results UK champions for the Global Fund project, attended this event and enjoyed hearing from a number of high-profile speakers, including Mark Steibel, who dialed into our call last month, the MP Nick Hurd, and Annie Lennox. Moses from the London Group and Shrika, a new grassroots campaigner based in Nottingham, also attended the event. And then on Thursday the 14th of July, our grassroots had a meeting with the Global Funds team at the Department of International Development. There are a number of our grassroots members who attended and asked lots of interesting questions at such a timely moment with the upcoming replenishment. Unfortunately, we don't have members in the room today or kind of on the call for feedback, otherwise this would have been a brilliant space to hear from you guys directly about your experiences of both of these advocacy opportunities. Some of you may have been following Jeff and Sue's experiences in Cambodia on the Global Fund delegation that's just taken place. If you haven't done so already, check out our blog or Facebook page to hear about how their visits to TB clinics went and why a strong global fund replenishment is so important. And they'll be on our call next month, so you'll get to hear from them directly about their experiences as well. And then for those of you who've been sharing the responses you've had from your MPs, we just want to say a huge thank you. We have seen some really great successes and some real impacts being made with Brent MP Dawn Butler asking a number of questions to the new Minister of State, Rory Stewart, on the 24th of July about the G7 initiative on climate risk insurance. So with no other organisation campaigning on this issue, we know that this is prompted by grassroots members in the Results Network. And finally, Results Manchester has been working really hard to build relationships with a number of their local MPs. Last week they met with Mike Kane, so this was, I think, the third MP meeting they've had in the last few months. Would you guys like to share how your meeting went and kind of what you discussed?
Yeah, hi there, it's Rebecca here from the Manchester Group. I know quite a lot of you met Mike Kane at the Parliamentary Advocacy Day last month during the National Conference. He spoke to us quite a lot about what he's up to at the moment, and I think for those of you that were at the Advocacy Day, he did a bit of an impromptu workshop on power and the importance of reaching out to the local community and how you can do that quite effectively, which is what he did with us as well. I think it's something that we quite often forget as a group, that we have these communities around us, these kind of ready-made networks that we're not really exploiting, and the importance of knowing people's backstories and getting to know them before you can ask them to help you out, I don't know. Mike Kane is someone that's always done a lot of work on TB and international development, especially with vaccination. He's a TB champion, so he wasn't really someone that we needed to reach out to and give him a lot of information about what we do. He knows about that already. He did grill him a little bit on what he's doing now that he's stepped down. For those of you that don't know, he was the Shadow Minister for International Development. He stepped down just after the Brexit result was announced last month. And he does not have any intention of kind of stepping down. He's working on global development. He's still got a lot of projects on the go. It's quite keen for results to get involved with as well. So we're looking to hear from him over the next month or so in ways that we can work together and cooperate on that.
Brilliant. Thank you, Rebecca. Can I just check if anyone isn't on mute? Could you make sure you are on mute? Thank you. Finally, we'd like to announce the merger of two of our results groups. So members of the Aylesbury group will be joining forces with the Results Oxford group, contributing to a larger presence there in the upcoming months. And then coming back to this month's actual materials, we hope this will help. They will help people produce a speedy letter to the editor. Thanks to everyone who has given feedback on how useful they were in the past. And we're going to try our best to make sure that talking points or easy learning exercises are included in future materials wherever appropriate.
Thanks, Samira. And yeah, I'm not sure if we've ever had a groups merger before, but good luck to you guys in the new way that you're going to be working together. I'm going to speed us on now to the topic of the month, which is nutrition. And obviously, as we know from last of the action materials, if you've had a chance to read those, there is quite a degree of political uncertainty in Brazil, and for this reason and others, it's not realistic for the Rio moment to be a pledging moment now. But it is still a chance to reinvigorate the momentum around nutrition, and hopefully a pledging moment will be agreed either later in 2016 or in the first part of 2017. So we are aiming to influence the Rio, what's being now called the media moment, and unfortunately we've heard recently it's not looking likely now that the UK will send a particularly high-level representative to the event. Now, obviously, that's just now 2 days away, and I hope some of you have already been able to write a letter to the editor of your local paper or planned in some social media sharing. If not, there's still time. I'd like to ask you to bear with me for a second now as I introduce, I'll call up our caller. She's called Jordan Teague, and she is policy analyst at an organisation called the Bread for the World Institute in Washington DC. So it's still morning for her, I think. They are partners of results through ICAN, which is the International Coalition for Action Nutrition, Action on Nutrition. So they're people we work with quite a bit, and if you could just bear with me, I'll try and dial her in and she can introduce herself. Right. Okay, I think have I still got people? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, and Jordan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us. And you are on a call with grassroots, UK Results UK grassroots campaigners from around the United Kingdom. So right from Scotland down to the South Coast. And this is a group of people who are incredibly active and working at a really high level to influence the political process in the UK through meetings with their local representatives, their members of parliament, letters in the media, and we've got some examples of some really high-level campaigning on issues including nutrition. So that's who you're going to be speaking to and hearing from over the next little while, and we're very, very grateful that you can join us. We'll shortly be handing over the call to our grassroots campaigners who will have some questions for you that have been pre-submitted. But before we do that, I wonder if you'd quickly mind introducing your role at the Bread for the World Institute and why you think that why you feel that the work that you do matters so much. So I wonder if you could do a quick introduction for us.
Sure. So my name is Jordan Teague, and I'm an international policy analyst at Bread for the World Institute based in Washington, D.C. My specific role is focused on food security and nutrition globally, and mostly focused on maternal and child nutrition. And what we do at Bread for the World Institute and our sister organization, Bread for the World, is work with primarily the U.S. government on our foreign assistance programs and policies to make sure that nutrition is a priority, as well as poverty-focused development programs. And overarching goal is to use our efforts in partnership and in concert with all of the efforts from other NGO partners such as Results UK, the U.S. government, other governments, and other civil society to end hunger by 2030. So that's our overarching vision. We, as I mentioned, focus mostly on the U.S. government, but we also, since we're here in D.C., we also focus in on the World Bank, especially with their upcoming emphasis on early childhood development and something within that. But really, we analysis on policies and in-depth advocacy to make sure that nutrition and the end of hunger is a priority for these actors.
Great. Thank you for that introduction. I'm sure many people on the call will be aware that we work with a whole lot of organisations who are pushing on very similar issues to the ones that that Results UK works on, and it obviously gives us a lot more strength and power to be working together with others. So that will certainly be, have that in your mind as you do your action this month, that we're working as part of a whole global movement on this issue. Thank you for that introduction, Jordan. And before we go to the first question, I'd just like to remind everyone that our usual format is that once the initial questions have been asked, we open it up to the floor. As always, you can text them in rather than asking them verbally. And the number this month to text in on is 07906 662 571. That's 07906 662 571. So now I'll hand over to the group asking the first question, which is Neil in here in London.
Hi, so I have the first question, which is basically, it's easy to understand the importance of nutrition to the development of healthy populations. So why isn't more being done to combat malnutrition?
That's a really great question, and something that we in the nutrition community have been struggling with over the last 2 years. I think that, especially since in 2008, there was a series of articles that came out in The Lancet, the British medical journal, that really gave us, I think, some of the first solid evidence of, as you mentioned, why nutrition is important for early childhood development and even in mothers and adults. Before that, I think that nutrition has just been a neglected issue. There were other priorities in, say, the early 2000s, at least for the U.S. government. We were highly focused on the AIDS epidemic and getting our PEPFAR funding. So nutrition just wasn't high on anyone's radar. But since 2008, as you all likely know, there have been several academic articles come out. The Nutrition for Growth Summit in 2013 happened, and now nutrition has been enshrined within the Sustainable Development Goals between now and 2020. There's lots of attention now on nutrition, but since it had been neglected and underfunded until just only a few years ago, we still are starting a little bit from scratch, especially when it comes to funding the amount that's needed to reach the goals and targets we've set for ourselves. At least national governments and donor governments are less likely to go from investing very little to investing a lot all at once. It's a gradual process. So we in the global community, it has been increasing in terms of what's been given to nutrition, but we're still on an upward trajectory.
Okay, thank you so much for that clear answer about the kind of the relatively recent history on nutrition. I wonder if we can now go to our second question, which I think is from the Stort Valley Group.
Hi there, this is Jill. What level of resources are needed to overcome malnutrition, and where should that money come from?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and we need to have this evidence of how much money it's really going to take to reach the goals that we've set for ourselves in order to conduct really solid evidence-based advocacy with our donor governments and within national governments as well. Just recently, the World Bank, along with partners 1,000 Days, Results for Development, and others, recently came out with a costing analysis. So they looked at four of the six global nutrition targets that the World Health Assembly established in 2012. These are targets to reduce stunting, reduce wasting, anemia, and then increase exclusive breastfeeding. So they looked at the interventions, the activities that it'll take to reach those targets by 2025. And the figure that they came out with in April of this year was that over the next 10 years, we need a total
of, and this is in U.S. dollars, so I apologize, I don't know what it is in pounds, but it's $70 billion over the next 10 years. And that equates to about an average annual investment of $7 billion. And this is on top of what is already spent. So that might seem like a big number, especially because we are not spending $7 billion each year at this point, but this is the total that, and it will come from a variety of sources, including donors, so such as the UK government, the US government, but also national governments. And this is where the bulk of the money is going to come from, is the governments themselves investing in improving the nutrition of their own citizens and their own people. In addition, communities and households will also need to contribute a small portion of that money. So this, it's not just incumbent upon one donor or even just a group of donors. It's really incumbent on everybody that has a stake in nutrition to contribute to that that additional investment each year over the next 10 years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Interested to hear that kind of balance between international donors and the money that will come from countries themselves. I think that's possibly a bit of a different story to one that you might hear from maybe some aid skeptics about where the future of international development efforts lie. So thank you for sharing that. Can we move on to a question from the Oxford Group?
Hi. Hello. My question is, how likely are pledges of resources from major international donors given the financial insecurity in the world right now? And is it realistic that enough money will be pledged?
That's a really great question, and one, again, that the nutrition advocacy community has been wrestling with. We do have this evidence now that I just shared with you on what will be necessary to reach the targets that we've set for ourselves. But as you mentioned, we need donors and governments and other actors to actually commit and then spend or give this money. I do think that nutrition continues to become more of a priority from all of these groups. Especially with, increased advocacy, especially within the Fiona Nutrition Movement, the Sun Movement, has really brought attention to the importance of nutrition, both within the UN, but also the donor community, national governments, and civil society as well. I think there continues and there are really big pushes for advocacy on both the importance of nutrition and also the evidence on what we can do. We know evidence that these interventions work and that they are cost effective. And so this evidence-based advocacy coupled with the sea awareness that the stakeholder groups have has really helped to make nutrition continue to be more visible and also a higher priority within these groups. Now, that being said, it is a tough financial climate throughout the world at this point, but I do think with the case that the nutrition advocacy community has made on, we have the evidence on what works, we have the evidence on what we need to invest, and it's one of the most cost-effective investments that we can make. So I do think that pledges from all of these groups are likely at the next opportunity, especially with continued big pushes in advocacy within civil society and even within governments themselves. Whether they will be automatically up to the level that is necessary remains to be seen, and there are still opportunities to continue to push for larger and more ambitious commitments from our governments and from other partners.
Thank you.
That's a clear, I think, challenge back to us, isn't it, as part of that civil society advocacy that's needed. So for our last pre-arranged question is, I think, from the Birmingham group.
Hello, hi Jordan, it's Caroline from Birmingham here. My question is, what happens after the Rio event? If money isn't pledged, what is the next chance to get that to happen?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So as you all know, the Rio event is taking place on Thursday, and while we can still hope, we are hearing that it's not likely to be a large-scale pledging moment for nutrition where all of these stakeholders are going to come together and make large-scale, ambitious pledges for investing in nutrition. While that is the case, we do expect within the next year or so to have this second Nutrition for Growth Pledging Summit. While that is still being worked out and negotiated on who will lead, where it will be, and when, we can be fairly confident that our advocacy and our plans have not been laid in vain, and that our governments and other groups have heard our pushes for continuing this Nutrition for Growth process. So while we can't say for sure when or where it will be, there are lots of opportunities over the next year, such as the UN General Assembly in New York in September, the G7 Summit in Italy in May of next year. So there are going to be a lot of opportunities over the next year to push for commitments to be made, and whether commitments are made or not, lots of opportunities to make moments of awareness and more pushes and advocacy for nutrition on our way to the next pledging moment for Nutrition for Growth.
Great. Thank you for setting out very clearly what could come down the line. Obviously, we've all got a lot of getting insights from our sources of intelligence, and we're all going to be involved in nailing down what that actually looks like. I'm wondering now if we can open up questions to the phones. So we have obviously Jordan on the call, and if there's any questions which stray into results UK specific areas, then we have Anushree and Ben in the room as well. So I'm sure between us we can cover off most issues. Let's see. So anyone on the phones just want to kick off with a question?
Yeah, I'll have a go. Pete, Scott Valley.
Go ahead, Pete.
You spoke earlier about the additional cost of meeting the 4 of the 6 targets that were set in 2012, of 70 billion extra. I'm wondering if you can give us the median, what's the base spend at the moment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what the World Bank and Results for Development estimated is spent currently each year is about $3.9 billion, and that's from all of those sources, not just donors or governments. So this $7 billion extra each year would be on top of that approximately $3.9 billion.
Okay, and what proportion is the projected contribution of the developing countries themselves?
I will have to go back and look at that document. I believe that they mentioned in the report, and there perhaps we can circulate the link to the report after this call. There's a small report that's been released, and they expect the full analysis to be released in October with hopefully the what they're calling the fair share analysis. And that would be, you know, what the U.S. government, what their fair share of this $7 billion would be, what the U.K. government, and I know they're doing it for donors. I'm not quite sure if they'll do it for national governments. But I believe that, $2.6 billion of that $7 billion is the donor share. So that would leave approximately four, I believe, maybe a little bit less, $4 billion. For the national governments, and then a small proportion from the households, and some innovative financing mechanisms like the Global Financing Facility and Power for Nutrition, and other such mechanisms.
Thank you very much.
I've been really nodding at that 2.6 billion figure. Great, thanks for that. And can we have another question? I don't think I've had anything texted in yet, so is there another question from the phones?
Can I ask a question, please, Jill?
Go ahead, Jill.
I see from the briefing report that anemia in women won't be addressed until 21-24, which seems an incredible figure, you know, an incredible projection of that long. I'm wondering if there's any leverage in terms of Theresa May, Priti Patel, on that particular point, whether it's worth going for that, knowing of Theresa May's interest in women.
So that's a very UK question, but I would wonder if, Jordan, if you've got any thoughts on that from the sort of more of a global perspective, and then maybe we can hand over to Ben or Anushri to sort of give some thoughts on the UK side.
Sure. So I will just say, and this is true, I think even with my own, within my own organization and our coalitions here in the U.S., that maternal and women's nutrition, even though we group it together, we talk about maternal and child nutrition, that maternal and that women's piece of it has been even more neglected than the child nutrition. And that is for a variety of reasons. I think a lot of the evidence we have does talk more about how to prevent stunting within children, so part of that comes from maternal nutrition before the child is born, but we focus less on adolescent girls and women, just what they need for nutrition as women rather than just as mothers. So I think that it's become, we're thinking about that more and more as we think more about nutrition, but I think that even within nutrition has been more neglected. So making the case for the figure that you mentioned, that we won't really make our impact that we want for another century or so if we don't change what we're doing.
I'm going to add to what Jordan said, that the evidence for the first 1,000 days, which is from pregnancy until the child turns 2 years of age, has been so strong until now that somewhere down the line we've not focused as much on adolescent nutrition and pre-pregnancy nutrition, but over a period of time and with the Global Nutrition Report and other such strong advocacy pieces coming, bringing evidence on the need to focus on adolescent anemia, on the fact that the countries are making least progress on the anemia target. Countries are now beginning to focus on anemia prevention and treatment more and more. Specifically for the UK, we've been talking more about women and girls nutrition so that we secure the 1,000 days as well, and not having to intervene only in the 1,000 days. And you've all previously also worked on securing the UK's nutrition position paper or its new nutrition strategy. You'll be really happy to know that we've been having discussions with DFID, and they have now made sure that they have a strong piece on adolescent nutrition, on women's nutrition, and on anemia in that position paper. Although it's not released yet, but the draft shows that they have been listening to us.
Right.
Thanks for both of those contributions. So clearly there's a lot more we can be doing, and the evidence is increasingly there. Can we move on to another question from anyone?
I have a question, Kate from Oxford.
Go ahead, Kate.
Hi there. Hi, Jordan. Yeah, I just wondered how we're doing year in from the Sustainable Development Goals in September, it will be. Not just in terms of money, but in action on the ground and how that money is being translated in real terms for people.
Yeah, I think the answer is going to really be different depending on the country, depending on whether it's donor money. I would point you to the 2016 Global Nutrition Report, and this is an annual report. I'm sure you're all familiar that tracks progress on the commitments from the First Nutrition for Growth Summit in 2013, and also this year they are tracking a lot of national government nutrition targets and whether these are specific and measurable and achievable targets. So that report is going to have a lot of good information on country progress on these targets.
Okay, thanks. That's really helpful. Thanks.
And just to follow up with that, for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's quite a new piece of work. If you just Google 2016 Global Nutrition Report, it will come up as one of the first items, so that's very easy to find. Do we have any more questions? I think we've probably got time for maybe one more question.
So I have a question.
Go ahead, Neil.
I have a question about on the back of it, we're talking about a lot about pledging and a lot about donors providing money. What kind of work has been done to have a sustainable end to SMR nutrition so that we don't have to pledge money, but so that we build nutrition systems and food systems and supply chains?
Yeah, that's a great question and a really good point that donors obviously are not going to be a sustainable end to malnutrition, and I think the really high emphasis that Nutrition for Growth specifically, but also the scaling of nutrition movement has on the civil society in these high-burden countries and governments on, they are also making commitments. They are also pledging money. So these commitments they include financial commitment, so an amount of money over a certain number of years, but they also include policy and program commitments. And so making sure these countries have national nutrition plans that have nutrition objectives and targets that they are looking toward, making sure the national governments are equipped and have the capacity to both implement and also monitor their progress on nutrition is a part of, especially the scaling of nutrition movement. So making sure that we really build up the capacity of these countries, both the civil society and the government, to be sustainable in their progress and to make sure we can end malnutrition. And it's going to take all of them, but especially building up the capacity of those groups.
Great, thank you. So really useful to remind us that it isn't, in the long term, just all about huge numbers of donor pledges all the time, and that's really important to recognise that's that realistic picture. I think maybe we've got time for just one more quick question if there is anyone on the phone. I'll just actually, if you bear with me, I can check my
Let's go.
I don't think we've had anything texted in this month, so any last burning question on the phone?
Then let's go.
Go ahead, William.
Jordan in Washington, tell us how the United Nations Assembly meeting may be either affected or overturned by the vote in America in November.
It's a very interesting question and one that at this point, of course, we don't know the answer to. But I don't expect that, regardless of the outcome of the election in November, that the plans that are being laid for the General Assembly, I really don't think that much will change, especially, I mean, the General Assembly is going to be before the election. So I think that while it is a bit of a upheaval time for us, I don't expect much will be affected, at least in the next few months, in terms of the November vote.
thank you for that. And really great there to sort of end on a reminder of the reality out there of the world of crazy politics, which is, Jordan, where we started off this call before we dialed you in, talking about some of the recent changes in the UK and the roller coaster that we've been on here. So, yeah, good to recognise that that's happening in other parts of the world as well, and that our work has to carry on regardless of that stuff. So thank you for that. It's 7 minutes to nine now, so I'm just going to thank Jordan very much. Thank you so much for joining us and being so clear on the challenges that we face and the process that we have going forward. I'm looking at Anushree to see if she's got anything to add on that.
Not really. I mean, over the past many months, we've been working extensively on trying to secure a pledging moment, on trying to get donors, and we're working with, as Jordan said, with a lot of civil society partners and allies, not just in the donor countries, but also in the global south, so making sure that governments also get on board. But it's been slightly disappointing with Rio not being the ambitious moment that we wanted. But I think it's just time to remind ourselves that we can only go up from here if we sort of get together and we sort of mobilize around this lack of a pledging moment rather than sort of take it as a setback. If we start with a clean slate now, I guess we might be able to achieve more in the next few months.
Thanks. So, yeah, a real reminder, we've got a lot to do. We're always wanting to be positive, and there's plenty of scope for that. So, Jordan, thank you for joining us. I'm going to hang up on you now, but thank you for sharing the time with us.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity, and thanks for all your work over there in the UK.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think we should have dialed her out and still have people on the phones.
Yep.
Yeah. Moment of truth. I've been having coaching on the use of the telephones here. I'm sure some of you recognise I really need that. So I hope everybody on the call will have heard something to inspire them and to share the importance of the Nutrition for Growth agenda in this last couple of days remaining before the Rio moment and on the day if you're on social media. This is inevitably a very quick turnaround action this time round, but we do think there's scope, as Anushree has just been talking about, to strengthen the hand, particularly of staff in DFID, working on nutrition, to push on with that agenda and capitalise on the success and commitment that the previous government showed. So thank you to all of you if you are able to take this month's action, and we're finishing a bit early this month, so before I say enjoy the rest of your evenings, as we usually do, is there any last-minute bits of news or items people want to share?
We're being closed.
Harry, but, sorry, who's that going?
Jill.
Jill, go ahead.
I've been investing, well, looking into Rory Stewart, and I've got his book, and there's an awful lot of video clips out there of him giving interviews. It's a particularly good one of a TEDx talk when he's talking about the need for democracy, and he makes a particular point that the public should be engaging with politicians. It's worth listening to. I'll put it on the Facebook site, but I think it's something that we could quote at him if we are writing to him.
That's really helpful, Jill. Definitely holding people to account for the words that they've spoken is a great campaigning tactic.
But the talk videos are really good.
Great. And we know he's very, you know, we've been reading really good intelligence that he's very, very supportive. So that really chimes with what we've been hearing. I just wanted to share something that Carrie just texted me in. So we're talking about the website that William was describing earlier. Carrie's found that that's an address, email.number10.gov.uk, is what we think that was referring to. So again, if anyone wants to go there and put their views forward, then I'm sure that's all good, clean fun. So thanks, Carrie, for sharing that. I'll just read that again. email.number10, that's all one word, .gov.uk.
Or just Google email the Prime Minister.
Or just Google email the Prime Minister.
To me.
Any other last points?
Emily here. I just reading the French accent with David Cameron saying he wanted us to make sure we leave no one behind. Is that a David Cameron thing or a UK government thing? I.e., can we remind Theresa May a bit? Any thoughts on that?
It's a United Nations thing that was heavily driven by David Cameron and by the UK government, and how, to what extent the new administration pursues that slogan and progresses what that slogan means on the ground, we are yet to know. The Department for International Development have a Leave No One Behind hub, which by all accounts is heavily understaffed, doesn't really have a budget. So we're hoping that there are some positive developments with that in the next few months, to be able to work as a kind of cross-departmental team to encourage the nutrition team, the tuberculosis team, and all the various different teams across DFID to promote the disaggregation of data and the focus of marginalised groups that were so heavily left behind in the Millennium Development Goals. So, time will tell is the short answer to that.
Thanks, and although he didn't introduce himself, that was Ben at the far end of the room. I hope you can hear that. So yeah, it is a global concept, but it's going to have different levels of traction in different places. DFID are on the case, but we are questioning how much, and we'll definitely be following that story, because that issue of marginalisation is so important with the new SDG. So thank you, Emily, for raising that. I'm sure we'll come back to it on future calls. Okay, so it's 9:01, and thank you for spending your time with us, as always. Really great to hear from you all, and enjoy the rest of your evenings.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.